Jim Dean, what do you got to report on, sir?
Well, we're going to talk about the Ukraine Minsk talks and what they are and what they're not and what they could be. Because we had quite an evening. We were up late last night. The negotiators in Minsk, Belarus, they were up all night. I think they didn't finish till about 6 a.m. in the morning. I finally went to bed before it was finished. I just got tired out. I had done a Minsk meeting the eve of the meeting, the day before, rather than wanting to do something after. I kind of wanted to kind of get out in front of it and kind of review all the silliness that was going on. In fact, I came up with a title for it called Will Minsk Be Another Merry-Go-Round? Because that's what the other ones had been. But it didn't get published. I sent it into Press TV Tuesday morning. I was really, for the day before we knew what they were going to do, and they sat on it for a day, so I have to redo it now and send it somewhere else. But I'm just going to start. I'm going to read you the details of the agreement, the points, bullets, in a few minutes, but I just wanted to give you the lead in to kind of give you an idea, a little peek into how things go with our work. We can get prepared to do something, and then the situation changes, and the work we did is not going to be used. But I started out this piece with a quote. I wanted something to kind of set the tone. You know, we were all embarrassed, as most of us here, our listeners, being embarrassed with America playing the big bully and going around and getting war started and overthrowing governments and pretending they're the white knight on the horse when we're really the bad guys. So I wanted something to kind of be kind of a benchmark to start the piece off. And I looked in, I've got a pretty extensive quote file, but I found someone I had not used before. It was a Kennedy quote, John F. Kennedy. And it says, "What kind of peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I'm talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living." Of course, people give him credit for that speech, and of course he didn't write it. Presidents always have speech writers that often no one knows what they are, and the president gets the credit. But that really said it. Those days are over, and we long to get back where America can actually say things like that, and they're actually true. This is one of the reasons why we do the work that we do. We think there are a lot of Americans out there that agree with that and would like to get our country back there someday. And I'm just going to read you my first paragraph on this, and I'm going to move on. We have all been here before. On the eve of another ceasefire meeting, where all past agreements were totally ignored by Kiev, who used them to buy time to bring in weapons, equipment, and mercenaries to use in the next offensive. The West has been totally complicit in every step of this. So it was just a kind of reminder that we've basically been on a shell game here with the West, and they're pretending to try to work out a peaceful settlement because they never put any pressure on Poroshenko or them whatsoever. In fact, they goaded them to try to see if they could do a military solution. But I'm going to get back. We'll come back around, but I wanted to – they had a 13-point agreement that they hammered out in their 12 hours of negotiations. And I'm just going to cover them quickly. Comprehensive ceasefire, which will come into effect on February 15th. We're going to have the pull out of weapons, heavy weapons, which we had supposed to have had done on several times before. But the rebels made a very big concession. they wanted to have the new ceasefire lines to be the current ones because they've regained a lot of territory. And, of course, Kiev wanted them to go back to September when they held the most ground. So the rebels actually gave in on that. The new front line was in September before they gained ground on the offensive. And one of the reasons they did that is the safety zone is going to be extended. I think it was 15 kilometers to 20 before. Now it's going to be 50 kilometers to 150 kilometers to keep the shelling out. But see, that's going to be, we don't know whether they're going to have smaller mortars. They could still have minor fighting going on. So that's where some of the tricky part is. So the Republics made a big concession there to basically have the lines be what they were after all of the fighting they did. But they fought to basically get Kiev to the table and get this agreement. Number three, the OSCE, which is the monitoring group, will use its drone fleets and monitors on the ground, as well as satellite images and radar to ensure that both parties stick to the deal. It's the first time we've ever heard mention of satellite images being used. They should have had access to this 6 months ago, and because they didn't have it, obviously they were trying to limit them and their ability to know who was actually shooting at who so that they could lay blame. And they never did, so they were kind of fruitless, and the it was the West and the EU that organized that. Four, Kiev and the rebels will negotiate terms for future elections in rebel-held areas. So they've agreed to do those elections together, which would bring them back into Ukraine's legal framework. And I have a question mark there because they didn't really, that was kind of a vague term. And vague terms can get you into trouble down the road because everybody ends up interpreting it the way they want. But then this is the good part of number four. Kiev would adopt local legislation on self-governance that would be acceptable for the self-claimed republics. Now, that's a big concession on Kiev's part because they're saying that would be acceptable for the self-proclaimed republics. So they've kind of put them in the driver's seat. They're not trying to ram something down their throat. They're saying that they would have to come up with something that's agreeable to them. And, of course, the whole deal could fall apart on this if it isn't. Number five, you've got Kiev's going to declare a general amnesty for the rebels. Six is exchange of prisoners, which will be done fairly quickly. Seven, humanitarian aid convoys. Eight is a big one, a big benefit to the republics. Kiev will restore economic ties, social payments, and banking services in the dissenting areas. Now, I drew a circle around in the dissenting areas. I've not heard that term used before. So that was very meaningful. They didn't want to call them separatist, they didn't want to call them former terrorists or anything like that. They switched to the term dissenting areas. And for folks that haven't been around this diplomatic type stuff, it's always a big change. There was some discussions about that wordage, and somebody showed some flexibility that they needed to change the word, that they weren't going to continue doing the name-calling and the stupid Kiev saying that they were running an anti-terrorist campaign. And the republics would also begin taxing and paying Kiev for utilities. And then the interesting last line, this provision is subject for further negotiation, which is a very good realization that they had some unsettled things on that, and rather than holding up an agreement getting announced, they decided to give them a little further negotiation point there. Number nine. This is kind of a biggie. After local elections are held in Donetsk and Lugansk regions, Kiev is to restore control over their borders with Russia. The transition may take time, which would need to be needed for constitutional reform in Ukraine. So, in other words, the rebels are agreeing to let Kiev get in their back door between them and Russia. Once they have an agreement that Russia, and of course you're going to have the U.S. and Russia probably guarantee it. Number 10, all foreign troops, heavy weapons, and mercenaries are to be withdrawn from Ukraine. Illegal armed groups would be disarmed. That's assuming those were Ukrainian people, like the right sector people. But the local authorities of Donetsk and Lugansk would be allowed to have legal militia units. That's a very big concession from Kiev. They recognize that there's no way after this point that the Southeast Republics are ever going to let go of all their troops and all their weapons and all their guns, that they would never have themselves defenseless again. So they agreed for them to have legal militias. And they're not having to give up and surrender their heavy weapons. They're just having to withdraw them. And then 11, this is the biggie, Kiev will implement comprehensive constitutional reform by the end of the year, which would decentralize the Ukrainian political system and give privileges to Donetsk and Lugansk. The privileges would include language self-determination, the freedom to appoint prosecutors and judges, and to establish economic ties with Russia. That's a very big concession from Kiev. Now, we don't know what that constitutional reform is going to be. And again, these are areas where things could fall apart. But they did specifically already give up language determination, appointing prosecutors and judges, so you can't rig everything through the courts. And they can deal independently with Russia. They don't have... If they want to basically do special financing deals with Russia, they don't have to go to Kiev to get permission for it. And then 13, this is kind of strange, talks between the contact group will be intensified in various ways. I had no idea why they put that in there. So that's what they spent 12 hours knocking out, and that's after all the preliminary stuff was done. Because the preliminary people, usually the big guys don't come in unless they're pretty guaranteed that they're going to have a deal, because these guys don't like to come and spend a lot of negotiations and then go home with nothing. It makes everybody look bad. So now let's go behind the scenes today. Most of the press has been upbeat. Everybody happy they got something done. They talked. The point seemed serious. Everybody realizes that some compromises had to be made that people didn't want to make. So they've been generally upbeat. But here are some of the things that that I noticed. Not by coincidence, I don't think. The IMF, on the day this agreement was announced, the IMF announced a $17.5 billion IMF financing. Do you think that was just a coincidence, too? Or was that...
No, it's never a coincidence.
Never a coincidence. That's a little bit of a... So the people of Europe, you just had to pay $17.5 billion to get Kiev to go along. That's now we'll have to ask ourselves, who's the puppet here? We've been talking about the Kiev government being our puppet government, but I kind of wonder who's stringing who along here, because they got another $17.5 billion. And of course, that $17.5 billion, it ain't never going to be paid back. So some of the European banks or European currency is going to take a hit on that down the road. Before the meeting, we had the announcement that Big Army, which is the main U.S. Army campaign, is going to be sending an entire battalion to Ukraine to train three Ukraine battalions. So the U.S. was hanging out of this thing, but they already established before this was done that they were going to go in and start formal training of the Ukrainian army, which has just been in a horrible state. And as it showed itself on the battlefield. Then another surprise, which came out today, Poroshenko, and I'm going to write a piece called on this, is that the, he's the new Holocaust laws in the Ukraine. Poroshenko wants to have legislation passed criminalizing Russian invasion denial. In other words, anybody in Ukraine who says the Russians did not invade, that's a felony. It's like the official history that they have on World War II. They think it's neo-Nazism, but actually it isn't. It's much worse than that. They have what they call an official version of what happened in World War II. And, of course, wars always have incredible amounts of lies that were done and things that they want hidden that were so nasty they never want publics to know that leaders and countries did some of these things. So
the body count, Jim. The body count. It never comes up for a decade, 2 decades later.
Yeah, and I mean, they lie about anything.
7 times the amount, yeah.
So when David Irving and some of these people really started getting down into the shorts and coming up with some of the really, really nasty stuff that went on, even from the West, and, you know, that Churchill was a spy for Czechoslovakia when his party was out of power and he was always overspending. He liked the high life. So he used to moonlight providing the Czechs with intelligence. And governments don't like that when people start digging into the archives and publicizing stuff like that. But what he says is if anybody that promotes the story that the only reason that the Ukraine army lost was the official reason is because the Russian army came pouring over the border and always attacked us in the rear and the flank. And that is and they are responsible for dragging this thing out all of these years. So they're actually going to make it a criminal penalty for anybody to disagree with that. And anybody want to take a bet whether any of these freedom and justice and democracy countries in the West object to this publicly?
They won't. You know,
bet you they won't.
It's you know, Jim, and I'm not trying to change studies, but it sounds like Israel. Come to Israel, all you Christians, and support us and give us money. We're the chosen people. We're the Holy Land. But if you come here and preach Christianity, you're going to be locked up for the rest of your life.
And it kind of, when I got this, I came up with another writing topic, and this is kind of how they come together. Once I saw this story, I came up with a working title right away. The West supports Holocaust denial in Ukraine. Because what Poroshenko was really doing there, and it ties in with something else that came out a week ago, a German intelligence release, which really surprised us. But they said that, like we've been saying, is that the casualty figures for the war have been just phenomenally held low. And they came out, we were in the like the 35 to 50,000 range, because that's all we could come up with. The German intelligence said 50,000 civilians and military killed. That's as many U.S. troops that were killed in all of the Vietnam War. That's a Holocaust.
That is a Holocaust, and we sat by and let this happen. You know,
what they did is that's why they kept the numbers down in the 3,300, 3,600, whatever. They're thinking military, civilians, and whatever. Nobody really got upset at the numbers, but they knew 35,000, 45,000, 50,000 that the public would have gone, my God, what is going on? And we're having a ceasefire here? And ceasefire violations are killing tens of thousands of people? Those aren't ceasefire violations. That's an all-out war. So what Poroshenko's trying to do here is he's trying to get through this and actually cover that up, that the West sat by not only not objecting to the shelling, and of course that's what we got used to. 3 people killed today, 11 wounded. 7 the next day, 15 wounded. Only 2 the day after, and 5 wounded. And everybody just got anesthetized. They said, well, you know, these people just like to fight and kill each other, and a lot of people just tuned out. But it was a lot worse than that. And the West said nothing. There was no public statement ever hey, Kiev, if you don't stop shelling these civilian areas, we're going to cut off the funding. Now get in there to that negotiating room, sit down, make some compromises, give them some local autonomy, make them feel safe that they're not going to continue trying to kill them and wreck all their infrastructure, which is exactly what they tried to do, because we don't want to have to spend all of our money having to rebuild. You're having blown the whole country up. And that, the reason I went over these details, these points to you, this could have been done 6 months ago, 9 months ago, if the West, if the EU and the U.S. had put the squeeze on them. And the only reason that this got done now and not earlier is because the West and the EU really wanted to see a military confrontation in terms of either winning the republics out so Kiev could exploit the crap out of Donbass and all their resources and their coal and everything to help secure their loans, or as plan B, they might be able to provoke the Russians into actually coming in with Russian troops, which would then give them complete cover for their coup, their violent coup. And then the end of the story of the whole thing would be Russians invade Ukraine. So now NATO can go up and the U.S. would move more fighter wings to Romania and whatever. So that they were using a two-flank approach. Either we'll get the military victory that we want, and if we're able to goad the Russians to actually going in sizably, we can then we'll be off the hook for all the fairy tales that we told. So,
do you think Fox News will get off the hook after telling everybody on the air day after day? And what's here on CNN, Megan Massad? Do you think that they can come back now and deny that Russia invaded Ukraine? They kept saying that after Russia had invaded Ukraine, yeah. This happens.
And we're still waiting for the first thing. Now, here's the story there, and I'll move out. I'll just take a few more minutes and let you get on with Preston. But we had the American ambassador in Moscow actually spill the beans on the Soviet invasion, and he basically undercut Kiev's claims at one point that there were like 9,000 Russian troops. And he just blew it out of the water. Of course, it never got published here in the West. He said what the Russians have over there is they have some general staff, command staff people who know how to run operations and how to track intelligence and do mapping and coordinate, because the Russians obviously were supplying the republics with intelligence and satellite, like where Kiev's were planning attacks and where their artillery replacements were, and where they were marshaling do their next attack. That's the only way the republics were able to survive, because they had less men, and they always had to be ready for them wherever they were going to be able to attack. So, sure, they had command staff in, and that included wireless interception, being able to intercept communications. They had to have things like that. And, of course, the U.S. and the EU and NATO, they were supplying the same capacity to Kiev. And they were doing it from, like, day one. And when Kiev did their first, yes, we're going to sit down and talk, and they launched their first offensive, the U.S. And Western contractors were in there backing that offensive all the way. They had command staff and wire intercept, all that people in there. So we were on the offense while we were pretending to be ceasing for a ceasefire and a political settlement from day one. And then the other thing that he mentioned, he says, and the other thing that they would have, active duty military, is that they have put some sophisticated weapon systems over there, and he didn't use the word anti-aircraft missiles, but that's what they were. And he said, of course, you just can't turn over sophisticated weapons to militiamen. And then he said something surprising. He went a little further. He says it takes about 2 years of training. He said we have to train our own troops for about 2 years to be able to operate these Western systems. So, sure. So when they, in the beginning of the war, Ukraine was just bombing them. They were bombing civilians and whatever. And obviously, the U.S. and the EU didn't seem to have any problems with that whatsoever. I mean, here they are. It's an anti-terrorist campaign, and they're just they're using dumb bombs, and they were just killing all kinds of people. So obviously, the Russians went in there and gave them some anti-aircraft cover. And then you'll notice that you didn't, after a while, you didn't hear of any more plane bombings, because they lost a lot of planes. And during the Debaltseve pocket, when they were really pressed, they did put planes in for a day, and one day I think they lost one helicopter and two planes, and they stopped flying them. So that was really all that we're really talking about in terms of Russian military, just those specialties, because the republics had enough men. Ukraine has had people in the draft for years. The Donbass is filled with, you know, tens and tens and tens of thousands of veterans that have been in the services. They've been trained. They know how to do their weapons. They know how to handle tanks and artillery guns, and they already had trained military. And sure, they had people from the Ukraine who were working in Russia, and a lot of those Ukrainians came back, and they were also had been veterans, and they had Russian passports. But sure, so, but there were no, this combination that you had like entire brigades, Russian brigades. They never crossed the border. All of those sort of, if they had had the photographs and the satellite images for that, NATO and the U.S. and the Pentagon would have released them months and months and months ago, and they never did. But that's a quick Minsk review. And so everybody say their prayers that these people somehow, that the scumbags that started this and the ones that are still out there that want to wreck this, that somehow we'll be able to wreak vengeance on their heads. And we do want to, even when this is done and over with, we want to do everything that we can to hunt down everybody that had anything to do with getting this started. And no amnesties. Because we look at this whole thing, including the coup, as one big terrorist act upon a country. And we want everybody that was involved with it to know that there are people that want to hunt them down and punish them, and it will be our goal for the rest of our lives to get them any way that we can. And with that, I'll say Saranaya.
Hold on, Jim. Hold on. Doc, do you have any questions for Jim?
No, I just want to say a couple things. Number one, it is a, for people that don't know, it is a fact that Jim Dean is the number one intel analyst in, you know, the West. Nobody else has contacts on the ground, has this kind of information. It is so confusing. I studied this stuff. I don't have a clue. And he's the one that straightens me out. I send him questions. He answers them. There is nobody else that has laid it out like he does. And I say highest commendations, because this man's work is incredible. You can get it on VT. And between he and Gordon Duff, I keep thinking that Gordon cannot publish anything more. And then the next couple of days, something else comes out. His articles are absolutely over-the-top incredible. It's hard to believe, but if you want real intel, and we're not talking pretend stuff or made-up stuff, we're talking real intel, then you look at articles by Jim Dean and Gordon Duff, because you will not get anything like this anywhere else. This is better than anything in the Pentagon. This is better than anything in MI6. The only place you're getting anything close to this maybe is in the German intel, or maybe in areas of Russian intel. It is very hard to get this information. I don't know how Jim does it, but I sent him questions, and he's already got the answer. What I just found out from sources myself, and I'm confused about it. So I want to thank you.
And we could rename him. We could call him Ambassador Jim, because the only guy that I know of that the Syrian government invited him over to monitor the Syrian elections.
Diplomatic immunity with that now?
Well, I would think so. I mean, when Gordon becomes president, I definitely think you'll have diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, we may need it someday. So,
matter of fact, I get to be the hanging judge. What position are you going to take, Jim? Secretary of State? I think it's a good position for
you. One thing
it.
It's important to point out, and I think this is really important, and I would get, I know Gordon agrees with this, but that basically all this terrorist crap, all this war-starting stuff is all organized crime. We're seeing the fingerprints of organized crime. Would you agree, Jim?
Yep. It's all about money. They let the politicians power trip on it all. They want to, and the guys that are in it for the money, they say you can just power trip and be the man on the stage all you want to, as long as we get those big contracts. And we like long wars. We don't like any of these 30-day or 2 weeks or even 2 month flare-ups. We like the ones that go on for years and years. We like the ones with big, long supply chains where you have horrendous, expensively supply contracts. And we like the ones that need a lot of high-tech weapons. And we like to have our weapon systems get compromised every couple of years, so somehow, miraculously, the other side seems to have as good a stuff that we've got. And then you got to give us a lot more money to do a whole new advanced set of weapons that cost 2 to 5 times what the original ones did, that only gave us an advantage for a couple of years, and now you got to pay us all over again. And you, Mr. Politicians, your job is to keep this game going as long as we possibly can, and we will fund your campaigns and appoint you to get all these big awards and call you a great statesman and whatever, and we will laugh all the way to the bank.
Al, I got an idea. When Gordon becomes president and I get the position of the hanging judge, what I'll do is I'll sentence him to a week in the square. We'll put him in Times Square. We'll put a big fence around him, 4-foot fence, electric. Nobody can go over and kill him. And we'll set rocks out, small rocks. And we'll let everybody, we'll strip him down naked and let everybody, to the war criminals, we'll let people throw rocks at him. What do you think?
I'm
going to give him a short rope, a long rope. I'm going to bury him in the back and shoot him. I'm going to give him what they deserve. And Doc wants to be the prosecutor. And Doc wants to be, well, I want to be tortured a little bit the way they tortured everybody else. Now, Doc wants to be the prosecutor. First, he wanted to be the guy pulling the lever, but I think he should be the prosecutor and have the pleasure of marching him up to me.
I'll be more than happy to help.
I'm sorry, Jim. I'm getting to be bent, but justice is overdue for these people.
But good guys, listen, you guys get on. I know Jim's got some stuff to cover because he's got his contribution to VT also, because we are a network. So you guys carry on, and I'll see you Thursday night.
Monday night.
Monday night. That's right.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay.
Managing editor, Veterans Day, folks. Thanks, Jim. And Dr. Preston James, what are you reporting on tonight, sir?
Oh, there's a lot of things going on. I've been working with Mike Harris on stuff. We've had a lot of conversations, and we have a recent article out called Working for the OCC, which means Working for the Organized Crime Cabal. And, of course, most people don't know what the OCC is, but when they find out, they think, oh, no, I would never do anything like that. But, you see, when you have a large organized crime cabal that is aligned with the bank that makes imaginary money and provides an elastic checkbook for Congress and for the mob, they can, of course, acquire as much power as they want by buying everybody, because if they're short of money, they just print or issue more, and that's what they do. So what happens is they take control of the whole system. They infiltrate and they hijack the whole system. So in a sense, when you pay your federal taxes, which are completely illegal and unconstitutional, you're working for them. When you go to work and work your 40-hour or 50-hour, maybe now the average professional worker now, I guess according to the last study, was 50 to 55 hours a week. That's a lot of labor. You are working for the organized crime cabal. You are working for the Federal Reserve crooked bank that is nothing but the world's largest counterfeiter run by the Rothschild World Zionist bankers in the city of London, which is a separate country. Well, look at every area of our society. Mike Harris and I have discussed this in depth, and what we believe is that the infiltration is so deep that the whole system is dirty. So you know, when you work for the state government, you're paying taxes that go to the feds, to the crime cabal. The state government's infiltrated. They've bought all the politicians, just about all the politicians. Any politician that goes against them, you know what happens to them? Like Dennis, what was that guy's name? Dennis
Kucinich.
Yeah, I can never pronounce it right. Hey, yeah. Dennis Kucinich. Now, you know, the guy is totally honest. Look what they did to him.
Or what about? Yeah, redistrict.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, what about Big Jim Traficant? Look what they did to him.
Yeah, they put him in prison.
And they murdered him.
And then they murdered him later.
Now look what they did to Harry Reid. Harry Reid just got the crap beat out of him three times. Somebody went and decked his butt.
And then there was that amazing picture of him and Boner, and who was it? Is he a cross-dresser, Lindsey Graham?
Lindsey Graham is a closeted homosexual.
Oh, okay.
Scared to death of being found out because he comes from a conservative area, and if the people find out, they'll run him out of town on a railroad.
A picture of him and Boner, and then I think it was John McCain. And that's
alcoholic? You mean Boner, the wine alcoholic?
That guy. And they were all saying, John McCain, you know, the war criminal and the father of ISIS. I call it ISIS.
Folks,
that's the correct name. It's imaginary ISIS. It's ISIL. Harry Reid, Doc. They were sitting around Harry Reid when he was sitting, you know, doing photo ops, telling everybody they were in charge. Like Beebe, you know, coming over here.
You find out what Reid did to get pounded?
Who knows?
Three times, and, you know, usually... If you've done something to somebody, usually they just whack you. But you know, beatings like that are usually money related. That they you know.
Maybe he voted for Pelosi for House Speaker.
Well, I don't know. I would suspect that it's mob and money related. He's guy's one of the dirtiest politicians there ever was, and
he is as dirty as can be. Harry Reid's up to his eyeballs in dirt.
But he's also been involved with the mob, and of course, maybe he pulled some money. He's got a son out there or something.
Remember the boys out there in Las Vegas? There's Daddy Bush and Milman and Mizell. They own and control Las Vegas. The Jewish mob and the Bush crime syndicate. And then you look at the district he represents, Las Vegas, though.
Well, usually when you get a whopping like that, that's money related. Just that's you aren't paying your debts properly. So anyway, he's in deep, deep trouble. He's like a little beat down mouse now. He used to be real tough and everything else. Now he's a mouse. So whatever it was, he's been beat good. He's had three beatings, and I don't know, maybe he's going to have a couple more. But, you know, he's a mess. So anyway, so Mike Harris and I, this article we've written, what we are trying to show is the reason it's so serious to have this large, this monetary beast, the counterfeiter, this phony Federal Reserve, which is not even a bank, it's just a crime syndicate, to have this hijacking our country, running our country. The reason it's so dangerous is because the corruption is insidious. It's infiltrated into everything. And really, when you work to keep the system going, it's their system. It's not our system. And so you're really working for them, whether you like it or not. So it's a discussion of why you're working for them, what can be done. Obviously, people can't just quit their jobs, too. They have to keep working. But there has to be a lane change in attitude. The main thing is we have to come in at some level. This is important why we elect Gordon Duff or someone like him. We need somebody in there that will have authority and will go in and rout these people out. We've got to bring justice to these people. And I want to see them tried under espionage laws because not only is the Federal Reserve, not only is the organized crime cabal, which has its two sub-factions, the Bush crime cabal and the International Zionist Crime Syndicate, not only are they huge RICO offenders, criminal and civil RICO offenders, they've engaged in major financial fraud, which has no statute of limitations, none. And they also have engaged in murders and mass murders and started wars and financing terrorism. All these various things which have no statute of limitations. They were involved in murdering JFK and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and lists and lists of people, including Senator Paul Wellstone. There is no statute of limitations. The whole system can be taken down under RICO. But even more important is that this banking system is an agent of foreign espionage, and we need to go after them under national security, true national security. And the way national security is used now is to cover up the crimes of the organized crime cabal. What we need to do, Stu, is use real national security. We need to liberate all these underground joint alien bases, all this shadow government stuff which has been privatized and has been farmed out to criminal corporations, defense contractor corporations. This stuff has been buried so deep, even you have the president of a corporation is not allowed to know what they're doing in various distant parts of the corporation. He doesn't have the necessary security clearance. Some of these projects are so deep, so unacknowledged, the president doesn't even know. Nobody knows. They become a secret government unto themselves, and they're a danger. And we need to get somebody in that will send the First Army and the Fifth Army in to Area 51, Area 52, Papoose Lake, and surround these places and just their little rat's nests of corruption and clean them out and drive out all these foreign the agencies of espionage like EG&G and all these foreign multinational corporations that are filled with people committing daily treason.
I say take a cruise missile once Gordon's president, send it right into Area 52 at Papoose, and send one into the NSA base up there that has the alien base next door going
well,
to Richfield, Utah, and just send it right up there. You know what? Get rid of this.
Well,
these,
Richmond,
these alien colony.
You have to destroy the NSA totally, completely. Get all the
it's
good.
It's not needed. The National Reconnaissance Office can work. We don't need the NSA. It's
no,
just
the
a
NSA,
conduit for the Israelis.
The NSA
that's all
it is. Foreign espionage. Well, we have to totally destroy it, every brick. But what we need to do first is take the good people out of it, the dupes, which are most of them, and reassign them back to where they came from or help reintegrate them, get them decent jobs. They should not suffer for being stupid. You know,
I'm not sure. Once they've been up there and they've committed the crime.
No, they don't.
You know, I'm not sure. You know, bring them to my court and let's decide.
Yeah, but they're just worker bees. They don't know squat. They're so compartmentalized, only the upper people know it. And the people that work under the tunnel down in Richmond with some of these alien hybrids or whatever they are. And that's the place that needs to be nuked. That needs to be completely taken out, that underground Richmond base. But the NSA needs to be destroyed. Good people need to be taken out of it. The crooks need to be charged under espionage and dealt with. And I mean fair, short trials, and no greater than a week, and deal with them. Let's let the military courts handle it because they're equipped to deal with espionage. Let the provost marshals get them. Let them run regular court marshals on them, just like the Rosen. Let them be taken care of like the Rosenbergs were. What they've done is 10 times worse than what the Rosenbergs did. They should fry for it, you know, or be hung, whatever. But we've got to clean these rat's nests, these private defense contractors, all these mercenary groups, and clean them out. Drive them out of the country. Get them out of here. No more private bases. Anything military should be legitimate military under control of our government. We've got to clean Congress out. But it all starts with the fountainhead of all this, which is this crooked counterfeiting system, the Federal Reserve, which is neither a bank nor a reserve. It is nothing but an outpost, a foreign espionage outpost. And it's destroying America right before our eyes. They're kiting the financial system. They're creating a web of debt. They're creating debt slaves out of everybody, and they're dragging the whole world down with them. All these people must be arrested, the top directors. We need to nationalize it. Completely pull in all their assets, all their personal assets, and the top directors take their cars, houses, even their clothes, every damn thing back and give it to the people they stole it from all the way back to 1914 when they started their first bank. Need to really clean these people out. And then, of course, we keep the system intact. The local banks, they're fine. They don't know anything about this. We need to take control over them, keep them intact, make sure their jobs are protected. You know, there's going to have to be regular bank fees for people to pay things. Everything's going to have to be changed to be fair. But we do need local banks, and most of the people working there don't know anything. They're just good people. That can all be restructured and folded in. We can keep it intact, the credit union, everything.
And they can put it all under the government control.
Exactly, the U.S. Department of Treasury. And, you should have running is Ambassador Lee Wanta.
If Leo is getting aged, he probably wants to retire. But then again, I don't know.
Look, the guy, he's a genius. You know, his IQ is about 225 to 250. He's not the greatest dealing with people speaking and stuff, but can he crunch the numbers? And he knows how to he could completely restore the United States economically in probably 2 years with his railroad and cleaning the debt out. And the guy's an absolute business genius, and that's the kind of, and he could bring the people in. He could manage it. He could run a board of restoration. He could bring the people in, and you know, I know what the guy can do. I've seen his work, and I am telling you, there's a reason why he was recruited by the government when he was 15 years old. His mind was so extraordinary, the school called the government and said, hey, this guy's off the charts. You might want to deal with him. And it's a senator in Wisconsin immediately took under his wing. Lewont had a speech impediment. He got him into the Optimist Club and helped him speak and everything. And he went to work as an undercover agent at 15 years old. He's been working for the government ever since. I can't tell you all the stuff he did, which would blow people's minds. There's so much to Lewont. So the reason Ronald Reagan hired him, it was not like just a fluky thing. The reason Ronald Reagan hired him, because he wanted somebody who was totally honest he could depend on. That's why he brought him into his closest confident advisor to be his own personal secret agent, to watch his back and to do things for him abroad and set him up in Vienna to do things his way. And he had a solemn agreement with Lewont that Lewont would get control, would drive out the Federal Reserve, get control of the American situation, restructure, bring the industry back in heavier than ever. Reagan knew the free trade crap was all coming down. He wanted to stop it. Now, Reagan wasn't perfect. He made a lot of mistakes. He got conned and did a lot of things wrong. But he was an American, and when Lewont used to sit in his office and eat lunch with him, Ronald Reagan would say, I don't care if somebody's a Democrat or Republican. I don't care what they are. As long as they're an American, I can work with them. And that was his philosophy.
Well, then what we need to do is we do need to talk to Gordon once he makes a commitment about possibly getting Leo that job. You know, I'd like to see Gene Chip Tatum run in the CIA. He would have fun cleaning the place out. He probably knows the scumbags.
He knows how to
clean before my court.
Absolutely. But see, the value of Lewont is he knows the whole system. He's worked undercover in all kinds of areas. There's things I know about him I can't tell you that are all good. Everything, there's so many good things he's done, so many accomplishments, it would blow people's minds. But the thing is, he could set things up. He could get things going. And he could have other people doing the work, but he could lay the system out. We've got to get some good people in there that will do something. Now, of course, Gordon Duff, he could take the good things of the Democratic Party, which there are a lot of, and he could take the good things of the Republican Party, the management and the business skills. And what we need somebody is that can put everything together, you know, that's a generalist that can bring the best of both and get everybody involved, people as Americans, not as Democrats, not as Republicans, but as Americans. And that's one thing FDR did. I know I remember my parents telling me about him. You know, they were Republicans, they hated the Democrats, but FDR brought everybody on board and people back. He got the confidence of the country.
And that's what Leo, I mean,